Chapter 16. The days that followed were amongst the most tumultuous in the history of Caliban, seeing many changes wrought to the surface and to the people in an uncommonly short time period. Alongside the Astartes came all manner of men and women from Terra and other worlds with exotic-sounding names. A great many of them were non-military, civilians, administrators, scribes, notaries, and tale-tellers. They spread far and wide in an apparently random swell of exploration, telling of the glory of Terra and the nobility of the Emperor's mighty endeavour. Around hearth fires and in newly constructed townships, they told versions of the tale related to Zahariel by brother librarian Israfael. The glory of the Imperium and the Emperor became the most oft-told stories of Caliban, supplanting more ancient myths and tales in the space it took to tell them. Yet others came to the surface of Caliban, hooded figures of metal and flesh that were known simply as the Mechanicum. These mysterious figures guarded the technology of the Imperium and undertook frequent surveys of the planet from roaring flying machines. Much was learned in these days beyond the histories lost to the people of Caliban over the thousands of years they had been separated from Terra. Technology and the advances of science, long absent from Caliban, were shared freely, and the people embraced such things with a vigour heretofore unseen on this grim and deathly world. Freed from the tyranny of the beasts, the people of Caliban had the leisure to devote their attentions to the betterment of their society, utilising the technology brought by the Imperium to clear vast tracts of land for agriculture, open rich seams in the mountains to produce stronger metals, build more efficient manufacturing facilities, and lift them from the dark age in which they had been living to a more enlightened age of illumination. A great many of the new arrivals on Caliban were military personnel, and it was here that the first sources of friction were to emerge. The Astartes had been welcomed by the general populace of Caliban as the ultimate embodiment of the knightly orders that already ruled their lives, and by the knights as inspirational figures of legend. As much as the knights had welcomed the fact that the organizational makeup of the Astartes had closely matched that of the knightly orders, they were soon to find that there were more differences than similarities. Where the knightly orders revelled in their differences and often resorted to combat to settle their feuds, the legions were united in purpose and will. Such division could not be tolerated, and at the behest of the Lion and the Astartes, the individual knightly orders were disbanded and brought under the control of the First Legion. Of course, such a drastic move did not happen overnight and could not pass without dissenting voices, but when the Lion spoke in favour of the union of knights and the glory that would be theirs for the taking in the service of the Emperor, most such voices were stilled. Most, but not all. More objections were raised when members of the other military arms of the Imperium descended to the surface of Caliban, the soldiers of the Imperial Army. The Astartes trials had already identified the likely candidates for selection to that august body, but the vast majority of the planet's population would still be able to serve the Emperor in the army. Where before military service had been an avenue open only to the nobility of Caliban until the inception of the Order, Imperial recruiters spread throughout the planet's population, offering a chance to journey from Caliban and fight in the Emperor's armies on 1,000 different worlds. They offered a chance to travel, to see strange new worlds, and to become a part of history. Tens of thousands flocked to join the Imperial Army, and the Knights of Caliban grumbled that if the peasants were allowed to fight, then where lay the nobility of combat? War was surely a noble endeavour, one fought between men of equal standing, and if the lowborn were given the chance to fight, what horrors might be enacted in such mass warfare? When the exactors of the army had achieved their quota of recruits, thousands of camps were set up throughout Caliban, where discipline masters and drill sergeants began training the adult population of Caliban in the ways of the Imperium's war. Within an unimaginably short time, the surface of Caliban was transformed from a world of sprawling wildernesses and castles to one of martial industry that rang to the beat of factory hammers and the tramp of booted feet as its populace geared itself up for war. It was a time of great wonders and hope, a time of change, but no time of change comes without pain. Zahariel and Nemiel walked the length of the outer walls of Alderuk, their strides long and their shoulders held erect. Both walked a little taller than they had before, their confident bearing more proud than it had been the day previously. Their armour was freshly polished, the black plates gleaming and reflective, and they had cleaned and polished their weapons as though their lives depended on it. No part of their attire, from their leather boots to the white surplices worn over their armour, had been neglected, and both boys cut a fine figure as they made their circuit of the walls. "Interesting times, eh?" said Nemiel, looking down on a troop of newly invested soldiers as they marched across the vast plateau created by the Mechanicum's crawlers in preparation for the Emperor's arrival. Scores of groups drilled, marched, or practiced assaults in the glare of the noonday sun, and many more trained within the walls of the fortress, something that would have been unthinkable a month ago. Zahariel nodded.
"Didn't you say that was supposed to be a curse?"
"It was. But what else would you call these days?"
"Wondrous," said Zahariel. "Uplifting, exciting."
"Oh, I won't deny that, cousin," said Nemiel. "But aren't you just a little unsettled by how quickly it's all happening?"
"No," said Zahariel, gesturing over the expanse of cleared land before the fortress.
"I mean, look at what's happening here. We've been reunited with Terra, something we've all dreamt of for, well, I don't know how long, but as long as we've been able to tell tales of it. Everything we've wanted has come to pass, and you're questioning it."
"Not questioning it," said Nemiel, holding up his hands. "Just, I don't know, expressing caution. That's only sensible, isn't it?"
"I suppose so," allowed Zahariel, crossing his arms and leaning over the tall parapets. Pillars of smoke scored the distant horizon, and he knew that vast tracts of land had been cleared for the raising of giant factory complexes and worker settlements. He had ridden out to one of those complexes a few days ago, and had been shocked by the scale of industry the Mechanicum had unleashed. Great scars ripped in the sides of the mountains, and thousands of acres of forest land torn down to make way for construction. Like it or not, the surface of Caliban would never be the same again.
"Yes," said Zahariel at last, "it is happening very quickly, I'll grant you, but it's all for the greater good. As part of the Imperium, we have a duty to provide what bounty our world has to the Great Crusade."
"Indeed we do," agreed Nemiel, joining him at the wall. "But it's a shame it has to be like this, isn't it?"
Zahariel nodded as Nemiel pointed at the boxy structures dotted around the outskirts of the fortress. Barracks, weapon stores, mess halls and vehicle parks. Ugly grey boxes on tracks were parked there, vehicles that were called chimeras by the Imperials. They were noisy and uncomfortable to ride in, and they churned the ground they crossed to ruined mud. There was no nobility to them, and even their very name struck a chord of unease in Zahariel after so long fearing such beasts in the dark forests of Caliban.
"You can't tell me you're happy about sharing Alderuk with any old peasant. The new Lord Cypher's about to bust a gut at the thought.
I'll admit it feels strange, but I truly believe it's for the better. Come on, aren't you glad that we've been selected for the final Astartes trials?"
Nemiel flashed a smile, and his cousin's old arrogance resurfaced.
"Of course. Didn't I tell you we'd be in there?"
"Yes, you did, cousin," smiled Zahariel. "Once again, you were right."
"It's a habit," said Nemiel.
"Don't get used to it," warned Zahariel. "I have a feeling we'll be wrong more than right the more we learn of the Imperium."
"How so?"
"Just the other day, I said to Brother Israfael that the Emperor was like a god. I thought he was going to have a seizure."
"Really?"
Zahariel nodded and said,
"Aye. He clamped his hands on my shoulders and told me never to say such a thing again. He told me that it's part of their mission to put an end to such mystical nonsense, gods and demons and the like."
"They don't believe in things like that?"
"No," said Zahariel emphatically. "They don't, and they don't like others who do."
"That sounds a bit close-minded."
"I suppose," admitted Zahariel. "But what if they're right?"
Nemiel turned from the wall and said,
"Maybe they are, maybe they aren't. But it strikes me that one should always have an open mind when it comes to the unknown."
"Since when did you become cautious?" asked Zahariel.
"You're normally the first one to leap without looking."
Nemiel laughed.
"I know. I must be getting wise in my old age."
"You're 15, the same as me.
Then I suppose I've been listening more recently."
Zahariel's eyes narrowed.
"Listening to whom?"
"People in the Order," said Nemiel. "Senior people."
"And what are these senior people saying?" asked Zahariel.
"Best you hear for yourself," said Nemiel,
the earnestness in his eyes surprising Zahariel, who had only ever known his cousin to be flippant.
"What do you mean?"
"There's a gathering tonight," said Nemiel. a gathering I think you ought to be part of.
Where?
Meet me at the cloister gate of the Circle Chamber at last bells, and I'll show you.
This sounds secretive, said Zahariel. It sounds like trouble.
Promise me you'll come.
Zahariel took his time in answering, but the look in his cousin's eyes made the decision for him. Zahariel said, Very well, I'll come.
Excellent, said Nemiel, his relief obvious. You won't regret it.
The echo of the last bell had barely faded when Zahariel found himself before the cloister gate, the lamp wicks turned down and the seneschals who swept the passageways absent for now. Though he couldn't say why, Zahariel had chosen to avoid being seen by anyone, understanding, without anything having been said, that secrecy was the watchword for this journey. He couldn't deny there was an illicit thrill at the idea of this clandestine meeting, a sense of rebellion that appealed to his youthful spirit. The cloister gate was closed, and Zahariel checked to left and right to see if he was being observed, before padding across the corridor and flattening himself against the warm wood of the door. He tested the handle, not surprised to find it unlocked, and gently pushed down on the black iron, pressing his back against the door to open it. The door creaked, and he winced at the sound, slipping through and closing it as soon as a wide enough gap had opened. Zahariel pressed himself against the wood and turned to the centre of the chamber. Little light filled the circle chamber, only a few candles burning low upon iron candelabras around the raised plinth circumference. The stained glass of the tall windows glittered in the flickering light, and the eyes of the painted heroes seemed to stare down at him in accusation at his trespass. He silently asked their forgiveness as he ventured into the chamber, casting his gaze left and right as he searched for any sign of Nemiel. Shadows cloaked much of the chamber in darkness, the fitful light of the candles unable to reach much past the first few rows of stone benches.
Nemiel,
he whispered, freezing in place as the acoustics of the chamber carried his voice to its furthest reaches. He called his cousin's name once more, but again no answer was forthcoming from the darkness. Zahariel shook his head at his foolishness for agreeing to this meeting. Whatever game Nemiel was playing would have to be played without him. He turned away from the stone benches and started as he saw Nemiel standing at the centre of the raised plinth.
There you are, said Nemiel with a smile.
Nemiel stood with the hood of his surplice raised, his features hidden in a wreath of dancing shadows. But for his voice and posture, it would have been impossible to tell who had spoken. Nemiel carried a hooded lantern which cast a warm light around the lowest level of the chamber. Zahariel quelled his annoyance at his cousin's theatrics and said, Very well, I'm here. Now what is it you want to show me? Nemiel beckoned him to climb up to the central plinth of the circle chamber, and Zahariel chewed his bottom lip. To climb the stairs would be to go along with whatever Nemiel had planned, and he sensed that a threshold would be crossed that might only be one way.
Come on, urged Nemiel. You can't keep the gathering waiting.
Zahariel nodded and climbed the worn stone steps that led to the plinth, where only the masters of the order were permitted to walk. He felt curiously light-headed as he climbed up and took his first step onto the smooth marble of the plinth. Level with his cousin, Zahariel saw why he had not seen him when he had first entered the circle chamber. Nemiel stood beside a stone staircase that wound downwards in a spiral through the centre of the circle chamber. Clearly his cousin had climbed from whatever chamber lay below this one, though Zahariel had not known of the existence of these stairs or any secret place beneath.
"Put your hood up," said Nemiel.
Zahariel complied with his cousin's request and said, Where are we going?
Below the circle chamber, said Nemiel, to the inner circle.
The interior of the stairwell was dark, only a fitful light from Nemiel's lantern illuminating the descent into the depths. Nemiel led the way and Zahariel followed, his trepidation growing with every downward step.
Tell me where we're going, he said. You'll soon see, replied Nemiel without turning. We're almost there. And where's that? Be patient, cousin, said Nemiel,
and Zahariel cursed his cousin's obtuse answers. Knowing he would get nothing more from Nemiel, he kept his counsel as they continued, and he counted over 1,000 steps before they finally reached the bottom. The stairway opened up into a brick-walled chamber with a low vaulted roof, which was bare of all ornamentation. Like the chamber above it, it was circular, the stairway piercing the centre of its roof. A number of oil lamps hung from the ceiling at each of the compass points, and beneath each lamp stood a hooded figure in a white surplice. The figures stood motionless, their features hidden in the shadows of their hoods, and their arms folded across their chests.
Zahariel could not help but notice that each one carried a ceremonial dagger, identical to the kind used in the Order's initiation ceremonies. The surplices the figures wore were bereft of insignia, and Zahariel looked to his cousin for some indication of what was going on.
"This is your cousin?"
asked one of the figures.
"It is," confirmed Nemiel. "I've spoken to him, and I believe he shares our concerns."
"Good," said a second figure. "There will be consequences if he does not."
Zahariel felt his anger rise and said, "I didn't come here to be threatened."
"I was not talking about consequences for you, boy," said the second figure.
Zahariel shrugged and said, "Why am I here? What is this?"
"This," said the first man, "is a gathering of the Inner Circle. We are here to talk about the future of our world. Nemiel tells us that you enjoy the special favor of the Lion, and if that is so, you might be an important ally to us."
"Special favor," said Zahariel. "We've spoken a few times, but we have no great closeness, not like the Lion and Luther."
"Yet you both rode with him when the angels came," said the third figure, "and you will march alongside him as part of his honor guard when the Emperor arrives."
"What?" gasped Zahariel. That was news to him.
"It will be announced tomorrow," said the first figure. "You see now why we had your cousin bring you here."
"Not really," confessed Zahariel. "But say what you have to say and I will listen."
"It is not enough that you listen. Before we go any further, we should be sure we are all agreed on our course of action. Once we are committed, there is no going back."
"Going back from what?" asked Zahariel.
"From stopping the Imperium taking Caliban from us," snapped the third man,
and Zahariel saw hints of a hawkish face and prominent chin beneath the man's hood.
"Taking Caliban from us?" said Zahariel. "I don't understand."
"We have to stop them," said the second figure. "If we do not, they will destroy us. All our dreams, our traditions, our culture will be torn down and replaced with lies."
"We are not the only ones who see these things," said the third man.
"Do you know I reprimanded a wall sentry today for being lax in his duties, and he talked back to me.
I have never known the like of it. He said we didn't need to guard the walls any more because the Imperium was coming to protect us."
"It was the same in my order before we were disbanded," growled the second man,
and Zahariel realized that these were men of different knightly brotherhoods, not just from the order.
"The supplicants would not listen to their masters, too eager to submit to the Astartes trials. It is as if the entire world has gone mad and forgotten our past."
"But they are showing us the future," protested Zahariel.
"Which only goes to prove the cleverness of our enemies," said the first man. "Imagine if they had been more honest about their intentions and made clear from the first that they intended to invade us. All Caliban would have risen up in arms. But instead, they were more subtle, claiming that they came to help us. They say they are our lost brothers, and we welcome them with open arms. It is a cunning stratagem. By the time the majority of our people realize what has really been going on, it will be too late to change things. The oppressor's boot will already be at our throat, and we will have helped put it there."
"True, but remember it also demonstrates their weakness," said the third man. "Keep that fact in mind. If they were confident they could conquer us easily, there would be no need for this subterfuge. No, our enemy is not as all-powerful as they would have us believe. To hell with their flying machines and their first legion. We are the Knights of Caliban. We destroy the great beasts. We can drive these damned interlopers away."
Zahariel could not believe what he was hearing. Hadn't these knights heard of the Emperor's great crusade? Knowing of the glory and honor that could be won, why wouldn't anyone want to join it?
"This is madness," said Zahariel. "How can you even think of making war against the Imperium? Their weapons are far superior, and the walls of the fortress monasteries will be smashed down in a day."
"Then we will retreat to the forests," roared the third man.
"From there we can launch lightning attacks and disappear back into the woods before the enemy can counterattack successfully. Remember the words of the verbatim. The warrior should choose the ground on which he will fight, with an eye to strengthening his own efforts and unbalancing the best efforts of his enemy."
"We all know the verbatim," replied the first man. "The point I was trying to make is that we cannot win this battle on our own. We need to rally the whole of Caliban against the invader. Only then can we hope to win this war." We need to create an event that will let the people see the true face of our enemy, said the second man. We need to get them to look past all the surface smiles and mealy-mouthed words to the evil hidden within. My thoughts exactly, the first agreed. And we must do it quickly before our enemy can strengthen their hold on our world any further. I am sure, given long enough, the enemy will inevitably show its true colours to the people of Caliban, but time is not on our side. We may need to speed events along.
What in the name of the lion are you suggesting? Demanded Zahariel.
I am saying it would help our cause if the enemy committed an act of terror so vile it would immediately turn every right-thinking soul on Caliban against them.
Then you'll be waiting a long time, snapped Zahariel. The Imperium would never do something like that. You're wasting your breath and my time with this talk.
You misunderstand me, boy, said the man. I am saying that we should stage the act on their behalf and make sure they are blamed for it. There was silence as the others digested his words.
You want to create an atrocity and blame it on the Imperium? Said Zahariel. Nemiel, you can't possibly agree with this.
What choice do we have, cousin? Responded Nemiel,
though Zahariel could see that he was unconvinced by the words spoken in this secret conclave and was as shocked as he was.
The Imperium is not to be trusted, said the first man. We know they are plotting to enslave us and take our world for themselves. They are not men of honour. Therefore, I say we can only fight them by using their sly underhand methods against them. We must fight fire with fire. It is the only way we will defeat them.
You are talking about killing our own people, said Zahariel.
No, I am talking about saving them. Do you think it is better we do nothing? Especially when, by our inaction, we may be condemning future generations of Caliban's children to slavery? Granted, the course I propose will result in a few hundred, perhaps even a few thousand deaths. But in the long term, we will be saving many more millions of lives. More importantly, we would be preserving our planet, our traditions, and the way of life gifted to us by our forefathers. I ask you, is that not worth a few deaths?
Those who die will be seen as martyrs, said the third man. By the sacrifice of their lives, we would be ensuring our planet's freedom.
Yes, that is a good way to put it, agreed the first. Martyrs. They die so that Caliban can be free. I know our views are not popular, Zahariel, but this will make them more palatable, so that when the time comes, our people will fall into step behind us. This act will show our enemy in the worst possible light and incite hatred against them. Zahariel looked at the four men in disbelief, amazed they thought he might join with them in this madness. Of the four hooded men surrounding him, one had not yet voiced any opinion, and Zahariel turned to this figure.
"What of you, brother?" he asked the fourth man. "You have listened to this insanity, and you have chosen to remain silent. It is not acceptable for you to stay quiet at such times. I must ask your opinion, brother. In fact, I demand it."
"I understand," said the fourth man after a short pause. Very well, if you want my opinions, here they are. I agree with almost everything that has been said. I agree we must take action against our enemy. Also, given the strength of the forces arrayed against us, we must suspend the rules of honour. This is a war we cannot afford to lose. Therefore, we must dispense with scruples and commit acts we would normally find dishonourable.
Well spoken, brother, nodded the first man. But there is something else. You indicated you agreed with almost everything we said. With what do you disagree?
Merely on a matter of tactics, said the fourth man. You talked of staging an act of atrocity, creating an incident so terrible it will turn our people against the Imperium. But I would argue for a more straightforward attack. The atmosphere in the chamber seemed to Zahariel to become thicker and darker, as though the light fled from what was being discussed. With a single act, we can deal a crippling blow to enemy morale, said the fourth man. Perhaps if we are truly fortunate, we might even win our war in one fell swoop.
This act you speak of? The first man asked. What is it?
It is obvious, really, the fourth man said. It is one of the first tactical lessons in the verbatim. To kill a serpent, you cut off its head.
Zahariel realized the truth a moment before the others.
You can't mean...
Precisely, answered the fourth man.
We must kill the Emperor.
The words echoed in Zahariel's skull, but he could not quite believe that he'd heard them. Yet as he looked from one hooded figure to the next, he could find nothing to indicate that these men were anything but serious. He felt his gorge rise at such base treachery, and wanted nothing more than to get as far away from this place as possible. He turned from the gathered figures without a word, and began to climb the stairs back through the darkness to the circle chamber above. From below, he heard raised voices and urgent imprecations, but he ignored them and carried on upwards. Zahariel's anger burned like a hot coal in his breast. How could these men have thought he would join them in their mad scheme? And Nemiel, had his cousin lost his reason? He heard hurried footsteps on the stairs behind him and turned to face the climber below him, sliding his hand towards the hilt of a knife at his belt. If these conspirators meant to do him harm, they would find him waiting, with his blade bared. A light built from below, and shadows climbed ahead of his pursuer. Zahariel drew his knife and braced himself to fight. The light drew closer, and he let out a breath as he saw that Nemiel climbed from below, the hooded lantern held before him.
"Whoa, cousin," said Nemiel, seeing the knife blade gleaming in the darkness.
"Nemiel," said Zahariel, lowering the knife.
"Well, that was intense," said Nemiel. "Don't you think that was intense?"
"That's one word for it," said Zahariel, resuming his climb as he sheathed his blade. "Treachery is another."
"Treachery?" said Nemiel. "I think you're making too much of this. It's just some diehards venting some steam. They're not really going to do anything."
"Then why did they get you to bring me here?"
"To gauge your response, I suppose," said Nemiel. "Listen, you must have heard the talk that's doing the rounds now that the knightly orders have been disbanded. Folk aren't happy with it, and they need to grumble. Any time this change, people like to grouse about it and fantasize about what they do. They were talking about killing the Emperor."
"Oh, come on," laughed Nemiel. "How many times, when we were in training, did we say that we hated Master Ramiel and hoped that a beast would eat him?"
"That's different."
"How so?"
"We were children, Nemiel. They are grown warriors. It's not the same thing at all."
"Maybe it is different. But they're not really going to try to kill the Emperor. It would be suicide. You've seen how tough the Astartes are, so imagine how much tougher the Emperor is. If the Emperor is as magnificent as the Astartes say, then he's got nothing to worry about."
"That's not the point, Nemiel, and you know it," said Zahariel as he continued to climb.
"Then what is the point, cousin?"
"If this is just talk, fine. I will forget you brought me here and that I heard treason plotted within the walls of our fortress. But if it's not, I will make sure the Lion knows of it."
"You would renounce me to the Lion?" asked Nemiel, hurt.
"Unless you can convince the men below to cease this talk," said Zahariel. "It's dangerous and could get people killed."
"It's just talk," promised Nemiel.
"Then it stops now," said Zahariel, turning to face his cousin. "You understand me?"
"Yes, Zahariel, I understand," said Nemiel, his head cast down. "I'll speak to them."
"Then we'll say no more of this."
"Right," agreed Nemiel. "We'll say no more of it. I promise."